I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Brian.
It's again, I want to thank the group. It's an honor to be here. A lot of people have helped me over the time of being in AA, and a lot of people that I respect, and a lot of new people that also have helped me. And like, I love this group, and I love the people that's in it. So thank you. Thank you for having me be here, and thank you for having a major part in my recovery. So the past 2 weeks, I shared my experience about 1, 2, and 3, and I kind of dug into the 4th and the 5th about my first experience going through it, and kind of my second experience going through that again. And then last week I touched on the amends process of making them, and how those relationships, the ones that, you know, either said F off to me, you know, or the ones that I'm working on with, it's kind of how am I living my life now. With people that I made amends to, and they're still in my life. And so I want to kind of touch working with others, and I want to read instead of just sharing my own experience. So I want to start on page 89. And I think last week I touched on a little bit about, how the first time I went through the step work, I didn't know this book very well. You know, I barely could have read this when I first came in. And I had a sponsor, my first sponsor ever. He told me to read to page 63. I couldn't. I had to go to YouTube and search, you know, more about alcoholism and have some guy read it to me on YouTube. And then, you know, we met up like 3 weeks later, and he was like, "All right, so what you read about?" And I was like, "Man, a lot." You know, like, and I didn't read at all. And but with my next sponsor, like, he didn't have me read. We sat through it, me and him, and he kind of asked me, like, "Is this your experience, yes or no?" You know, and, like, he didn't push me into maybe making me into something that I'm not, you know, making me into an alcoholic, you know, if I'm not. And he asked me point blank, "Is this your experience?" And the way that he taught it, the way that he explained it, the way that he just did it, it just clicked better than the other sponsor, you know. And it's not that guy's fault. It's that this guy had a way to reach me, you know. And so I went through the 12 steps, and I remember being in a 12 and 12 meeting. Never read the 12 and 12, and it was a Friday meeting, and there were on the 4th step or the 5th step, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, "Wow, I've experienced that. I felt that. Like, I think that way too now." And it's pretty crazy how that just started happening. How, like, I start, like, identifying to what's in this book about what I just experienced going through this 12 steps. And then what happened was, like, for some reason, going up to newcomers, instead of being told, "Brian, ask that guy after the meeting, tell him if you want to go to the diner with him, bring him, get his number." Like, it was just all of a sudden where I was just doing it on my own. I was going up to newcomers, guys, like, "Hey, come to the diner. Do you need help? You know, like, do you have a sponsor?" And that was totally new to me. And it was at the Christmas Alcathon in Cranford. I had like 9 months maybe, and I made a couple of amends. And this guy came up to me after the meeting, a young kid, and he asked me to sponsor him. And I was like, "Wow!" Like, that was such a cool moment in my life, because one, no one ever really asked me for help, and if they did, I never showed up or never could really give them what they really wanted out of me. And two, it was like, "Wow!" Like, I kind of have something that may help him, you know. And that was a really cool feeling, you know. And what has happened is some things in working with others I've experienced where it's like, I start trying to get this guy sober more than he wants it, you know. And it's starting to affect me where it's like, "Man, like, I wish I could keep this guy sober and give him what I have." And it's pretty crazy that, like, the more I help others, and even if they don't stay sober, they teach me a lot more than maybe my sponsor did or what I think I knew during it. And it's pretty cool how it keeps on, this book just keeps on evolving over and over and over again. So, but yeah, and it's, I don't know, it's just crazy how, like, the meetings that I was going to, I think I mentioned this last week or the first week, how I was very excited to do this, you know. And I asked people, I was like, "Man, I can't wait to sponsor. Like, I can't wait." And I would just be told, "Brian, you're not ready yet. Don't, you're not ready." And, you know, there was a resentment right there, you know, big resentment. And my sponsor was like, "Brian, go out and make those mistakes. You're going to make tons of them. Just learn by them." You know, and so I kept on going, and I made some mistakes. I still do make some mistakes, but when I had that first guy, that first prospect to go through the 12 steps, it was unlike anything ever. It was like that hit. And and it's pretty crazy how like the celebrants who celebrated tonight shared about how like, you know, you go through a tough time in life and all of a sudden someone shows up in that life to help you get by. Like, that's pretty cool, and that's pretty unexplainable too. And from what it was taught to me, if it's unexplained, it has to be God. You know, and like, I'm being used somehow, and it has to be God. And from my experience, like, service has definitely kept me alive till now. It has. And working with others, getting into service work in the treatment field, like going to detoxes, psych wards, rehabs, all that stuff is a blessing to me. You know, it's like the one place I didn't want to go to at all. You know, and like, I go there and I can't wait to get there. I look forward to Fridays. You know, not only to see some of my friends come in, but like to see them in there. And it's like such a bright spot in my life, how it says in this book. You know, and like, it's so cool. So, work with others, chapter 7. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And I'll keep on going. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. And like I heard previously, you know, I got to go to the convention last night and hear the speaker, and he was, you know, he was talking about how you know, like, how we can help them when no one else could, you know, and we can secure that trust. And it was like me, you know, like from my experience, like you guys know, going to a large amount of doctors, psychiatrists, rehabs, detoxes, being in trouble, facing judges, you know, the hurt parents, the hurt girlfriends, the hurt friends, all this stuff. And they couldn't get to me somehow. They just couldn't, you know. And and some of them were enabling, but you know, going through this, I was allowed to see that they were just doing that out of love because they had no choice. They had no idea. You know, it's not like someone wrote a book for this and be like, "This is how you treat a son with drug addiction." Maybe they do now or whatever, but like there was nothing. So I hear people where it's like, you know, AA found them or they found AA, and from my experience, I just remember being in that detox, God willing, this last time, and that woman's group that came in that really just told like it all from the other H&I commitments and AA commitments that came into that room. She basically told me that the two main things that were basically killing me, and I was trying to stop this whole time. Like, I didn't want to drink, and I didn't want to use, but she just flat out said that, like, when she puts alcohol or drugs in her body, she it keeps on going. And when it's out of her, even though she swears it off, promises other people, she keeps on picking up. And that was it. And I was hooked, you know? And then thank God I knew somebody who is in AA, who I also resented, right? And he had 3 years, and he was the person who I reached out after getting out of detox, and I said, you know, I want help. I'm willing. You know, I'm willing to do whatever. And he brought me into AA. You know, and that's where I found my sponsor, like the guy who took me through the steps, because he was sharing the same message over and over again. He was saying how, you know, the only way to recover is going through these 12 steps, and how he had 2 years, wasn't really into the facts about his problem. He went out after having 2 years, and how he got worse not drinking, you know. And he kept on sharing it and sharing it, and he grabbed me after the meeting. And just by having him kind of reassured me that, like, me going through the 12 steps reassured me that what's in this book matches what I have, you know. And the way that he talked to me, the way that, man, this guy was a saint. I still get to talk to him, but it's like, it was awesome. And now I get to do that. And sometimes I forget they're ill. Sometimes I forget that. You know, like I think I told you guys, my first sponsee who went through the 12 steps, I judged this guy, you know, like based off of what he did. And thank God my sponsor said, you know, go ask him again. You know, and that's when he's, oh, I got a sponsor. You know, I don't need you. You know, and then he got worse and he asked me. And I got to take this man through the 12 steps, and he had an experience, you know, and it was awesome, you know. And so life will take on a new meaning, which it did for me. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot of our lives. And this is a great promise. And it's cool how I've met such awesome people and very sick people in AA. You know, like very sick people. And we became such good friends. And it's pretty cool how like. Outside of AA, I felt like the loneliest person with 100 group of people or my best friends. You know, I still felt lonely, and I still felt that way in AA, in the rooms of AA when I was with no solution. I wasn't sober without that soundness of mind. And now going through it, you know, they just came. You know, and like I have a few good friends, one who I just talked to, and this guy knows everything about me, like all my dark, deep secrets. He knows it, you know, and he knows when I'm off the beam, and I know when he is too. What a great relationship that is, you know. And we look at it as like a brother into a brother relationship, you know. And I don't have a brother, but I definitely know what that's about because of AA and because of this chapter and just the 12 steps and the fellowship, and also you know. Starting meetings other than AA and seeing like people from AA come and seeing like a host of friends and your sponsees start sponsoring others, and it's like holy, it's what an experience to see them helping others, you know, and then seeing them get the hit, like where they're so happy and it's like they're like, oh my god, you know, they're getting it on the fourth step, they see that they're selfish, you know, and it's such an awesome awesome feeling, man. It's so cool. And it's so cool, man, and it's awesome. And you know, frequent contact with newcomers is definitely the bright spot. I love going to detoxes. I love call. You know, during the days, like at work, it's tough. You know, like you know, working a lot of hours, and those people that I met over the weekend by going to meetings, going to the detox, I get to text them and be like, hey, how are you doing? If you need any help, do you want to go to a meeting? Do you just want to like hang out with us? Do you want to come? You know, and it's pretty cool how like staying, you know, focus on them instead of me does a big difference. And you know, and I've had good luck with people like that because this one fellow who was a chronic relapser would go in and out of these meetings, and they would give him that phone list. You know, like write your names down, and they would just. And like I pay attention to that, and I pay attention to who goes up to who, and it's something I do. And I seen this guy keep on coming back, and they wrote their names in the phone book, and they gave him the book, and they said, call this number, this is me right here, call me, you know, and no one else went up to him, you know. And then he went to another meeting, and I went up to him, and I said, hey, you know, my name is this, blah 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 blah. Do you want to ride home? Are you good? Like. And we sat outside talking for maybe an hour and a half about, you know, I'm qualifying him. And he's never heard anything like this before, you know. And I don't know if he didn't know what his problem was. I don't know. But, like, there was that glow, you know. But it wasn't that, like, six-day glow and detox glow. It was, like, that glow where it was, like, I'm okay, you know. I think I know where I'm at kind of thing. And he texts me the other day, the next day after that meeting. He goes, I want to thank you because you were the only one that actually reached out to me. Thank you. And ever since that, I try to get their number instead of them asking me for their number, because they're not going to call me. They're not. And like I didn't call anybody. They called me, you know, and I remember that. And it was pretty cool hearing that from that person. Even though they haven't had an experience yet with the 12 steps, I think it was that language of the heart, you know, and I felt it, you know. It was cool. Perhaps you're not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or a hospital. They will be only too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or a reformer. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You will be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So cooperate, never criticize. A lot in that paragraph, and a lot that I've done, and It's cool how, like, perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover, and that's the same with a detox, and that's the same with people in AA. You know, it's pretty hard to find someone who wants to, who's willing to do the recovery program. And also becoming an informer, an evangelist, you know, like, sad to say, but I guess it had to happen for some reason, and I'm finding that out now, where I would hear people in the meetings with 8 years, 5 years, 10 years, how in the beginning they were, like, this was a sledgehammer, you know, and they would just, like, beat people over the head with it, you know, and now they're just so spiritual, and they help a lot of people, you know, very quiet people. They let God run secretly in their life without blurting it out, kind of thing. And I'm like, man, like, what do you mean sledgehammer? How did that work? You know, and slowly but surely, I became one of those people, a reformer. And the reason why reformer makes me laugh, because I remember a guy screaming at me in a meeting being like, oh, they're going to recruit you. They're going to recruit you. Stay away from the big book thumpers. Stay away. Stay away. Mm-hmm. And that hit, you know, because it was like, all right, am I doing something right? Am I doing something wrong? You know, or is this guy crazy or is he sick? And I started realizing that the way that I was coming with this wasn't really attracting. It wasn't. It was making things worse than better. And it does. You know, unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists where, like, it's the same thing with the enabler, where my best interest is to help these people, not to hurt them. You know, and it's like my mother. She was doing more damage, even though in her head she was loving me the best that she could, you know, and that's what I was doing, you know, but I couldn't see that there's a way about this, you know, and I'm seeing it now, and the results are a lot better now than then, you know, and learning from doctors, you know, learning, being open to the doctors that I've saw in recovery, and talking with people from rehabs, you know, they're very open to our message, and some aren't. You know, and I had to go through that. And the ones that are that I have a friendly relationship with, I always get a call from them. You know, Brian, there's someone that needs help. Can you come in? And it's pretty cool how, like, having that bond, that relationship with someone that's on AA can help me. You know, it's cool. So to be helpful is our what is that? To be helpful is our only. Did I skip the page? Our only. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, underline, highlight. To be helpful is our only aim. Sorry. When you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste any time to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice is given for his family also. Then should be patient, realizing they are dealing with a sick person. If there is any indication that he wants to stop drinking, have a good talk with him. With that person, most interested in him, usually his wife, mother, father. Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his backgrounds, the seriousness of his condition, and religious learnings. You need this information to put yourself in his place, to see how you would like him to approach you if the tables were turned. And that's pretty big, you know, pretty big for me. And that's what I kind of do now, where, you know, I get to, you know, how's your home life? You know, do you have a job? No job? You know, do you have a car? You know, do you have a mother? Are your parents dead? Or are they living? Because, like, I want to see if they're, you know, like, if they had it, if maybe my experience can match theirs, you know, because it's tough being with, like, you know, being asked to help, like, somebody that doesn't have parents, you know, and I do. And I've worked with others that, like, were kind of envious of me having parents, and he didn't want help for me. It was flat out, he didn't want help because he couldn't identify on that level. You know, he was okay with the drinking and the other things, but me not having having a family up and him and he didn't. He didn't want that. He wanted something else. So now it's like I try to, like, you know, how it says, like, you know, like, feel where they're at. You know, because maybe I've been there, you know. Sometimes it's wise to wait until he goes on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he is in a dangerous physical condition, it is better to risk it. Don't deal with him when he's very drunk, unless he is ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of the spree, or at least for a lucid interval. Then let his family or friend ask him if he wants to quit for good, and if he would go to any extreme to do so. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. You should be described to him as one of the fellowship who, as part of their own recovery, try to help others, and who will be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. So, I have a good friend. I have a best friend actually, who's not in AA, unfortunately, and I grew up with him all my life. Best friend since five, you know, and he's my neighbor, and I have to drive past his house to get to my house. And he is an alcoholic and a drug addict, and his mother is asking and begging me for help, to help him, you know, and it kind of hurts, because, like, the way that he's putting, how can I explain this? So basically, I've been bringing him to meetings based on what his mother wants me to do for him, and the times that I brought him to meetings, he's kind of sleeping in meetings, doesn't want to be here, you know, not willing to listen, and that's cool. And after bring him to the diner, and what would start happening is that, you know, he'd be very into this, and then maybe 15 minutes later, after a cigarette, food, coffee, he start telling himself lies and justifying and rationalizing that he can maybe use once a month. And based on the experience, he can't do that, you know. And I know it, and he knows it, based on me asking. And it got to the point where I asked him, I was like, can I just take you to a bar, or do you want me to take you home? And he asked me to take him to a bar. So I took him to the bar, you know. And maybe that week or that month, his mother's calling my mother. And I don't think it was a good idea, but I think it was. And she's asking, you know, why isn't Brian helping him? Why isn't Brian there? You know, he only trusts Brian. And so my mother was saying, like, you know, like, he needs to ask him. You can't ask him. You know, let him, like, let go of him. You know, and that's why it was so important for that Al-Anon woman to tell my mother, stop killing your son. To stop. You know, that was really important. Because it opened up a whole new experience for my mother, you know, to try, and because she was left out of options. And so I'm driving past her house, my friend's house, recently, maybe a month ago, and she stops me, and she's like, Brian, I'll give you $100 just to take him out of the house. I'll give you anything. I was like, I can't do that. I can't take money. I can't. And it got to the point where I had to tell her, I was like, you're making his life manageable. You know, a person that's not, who is unmanageable, and having like a someone who loves too much and trying to control and manipulate, you know, you're managing his own life. Like, he's content living in the pain that he is in. You know what I mean? He's there. And she didn't like that answer, but maybe a week later, he reached out to me for help. And I brought him to a few meetings, and there's a guy who moved to Philly recently, and like we're starting to connect. And he's been coming to me. He's been coming with me every week to the detox. And for some reason, they started clicking. My friend and him. And after the meeting, the kid asked him. It's like, hey, do you want to come with me to go speak at the detox? And I look at my friend, and he goes, yes. And it was like, I wanted to cry right there. It was such an awesome moment, you know. And because I'm seeing it, you know. And there was no pushing, there was no resistance, there was no, maybe in the beginning, but it was just letting him go. And now he's kind of like on the fence about, you know, AA, and he's trying to figure out what he wants to do, and that's pretty cool, you know. And I told him, I was like, you know, come to me anytime you want to, you know, I'll be here. And you know, he the thing is that, like, he thinks he can figure this thing out, and I think he's getting to that point where he can't. You know, so I have to let go, but he knows where I'm at, you know, and that was pretty cool to see. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither the family hysterically plead for him not to do anything, nor should they tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. You might place this book where you can see it in an interval. Here, no specific role can be given. The family must decide these things, but urge them not to be over anxious, for that might spoil matters. Usually the family should try not to tell your story. When possible, avoid meeting a man through his family. Approach through a doctor or institution is a better bet. If your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly, unless he is violent. Let the doctor, if you will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. When your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit from you. Though you have talked with the family, leave them out of the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see that he is under no pressure. He will feel he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Call on him while he is still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. Yes, and that's so true. And so I like how it says under these conditions, your prospect will see that he is under no pressure. And that was my sponsor said it to me. He's like, Brian, please, like, you don't have to do anything I tell you to do. You're under no pressure. And that was pretty cool. That led me to do my own thing and go back to him when the pain got great enough, you know. You guys know when I was separated from alcohol and other things for 8 months, the girlfriend was begging me to go use again. I tried to kill my father, and my mother was like, get out of the house. Thank God my sponsor called me that night, he asked me twice, are you okay? And he was like, man, the worse you are, the better. You know, thank God for that. So now it's like, I got really good results going up to people and telling them, instead of being like rushing them, like, hey, like, you're going to die, go through the work, and being like, hey, it's no pressure, call me, you know? And they call me or they don't, you know? Even if they don't want to go through the 12 steps, I'm just like, hey, come with me to the diner, come eat, come to the detox if you want, and we'll hang out, you know? It's pretty cool. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation after a while, then turn to talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture if his mood is light. Tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Tell him, get him to tell some of his. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of the spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in a chapter on alcoholism. If he's an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to this idea that he can still control his drinking, let him tell him that he possibly can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, that he that may be a little chance that he can recover by himself. So I like this a lot, you know. From that, my first sponsor around Christmas time, he got to hear me speak at that Alcathon, and he started discussing how, like, he was just like me, how he thought just like me, and that was a good sign. And then there was others where, like, I will give rides to, and I will just tell my story flat out, like, the whole ride, and they will start picking out things that either they don't relate to or they do. I've got some where they don't relate at all, and I don't see them in AA for a while. And then recently, I had a talk with maybe an 18-year-old at the time about my story, and I didn't really go into... I didn't get, like, honest with him about, like, some of the things that I've done to others, and I didn't do a fifth step right there with him. I just told him about my drinking, you know, like, how I couldn't stop, even though I wanted to, you know, me banging my fist on the table, the car, about how this can happen again. And he kind of got it, but he didn't. And he kind of disappeared. And last week I saw him at a meeting, and he came right up to me. He was like, I can't drink. I can't drink successfully. And he wants help. And so, like, from this, just sharing my own experience, it's better than either sharing somebody else's or sharing something that's not true. You know, so that has worked for me. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk to them about the condition of the body and mind which accompany it. keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. And I kind of go in that, you know, my friend who came in, he has a lot of knowledge, and so did I. Having the gift of going to a lot of rehabs and detoxes, you know, you're kind of educated on like, for me, it was like people, places, and things. You know, write your history about blackouts, you know, how many DUIs, what drugs and drinking did you use, how many people have you hurt, blah, 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 blah. And then there was kind of some knowledge about, like, you know, picking up the first one and all that. And so I kind of explained to him that, like, whatever I thought I knew about this, I didn't and was wrong, you know. And I constantly keep on learning about it. It's not like I learned once and I keep on going. So I explained that from my experience. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not at all, of all the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he's alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to what... he wants to be curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature fairly. If that man be agnostic or atheist, make it empathetic that he doesn't have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he's willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he can live by spiritual principles, you know, 12 steps in recovery. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Keep on reading. Your prospect may belong to a religion domination. His religious education and training may be far superior as yours. In that case, he is going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows. But he will be he may be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. Very true. To be vital, faith must be accomplished by self-sacrifice and unselfish construction action. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. And so I've had a couple people be more educated in different religions than me. And the one was, believing in Jesus and the Catholic religion. And I shared my experience of how, like, I was kind of not pushed, but I grew up Catholic. And how the whole believing in Jesus and doing that whole thing kind of didn't really work for me. And how now my own conception kind of, it really does work for me, you know, and it keeps on going through the 12 steps. Like, now I'm going through the 12 steps again with a different sponsor, and it's changing, you know, and it's awesome, you know. And so I've had I know that I have a sponsee who is an atheist, and he didn't want to hear religion, he didn't want to hear God, he didn't want to hear anything about what you guys were saying. And so I just told him that, you know, I didn't believe as well, but I said, you know, what do I have to lose? You know, and I think I told you guys about, you know, it was kind of hard to get over the whole God thing. And my first sponsor was, it's very simple. He goes, you know, if you can kill 100 people, who would still love you? And I said, my mom, you know, she would still love me. And so I went with love, you know, and I also went with, you know, if this guy can do it, I can too. So my sponsee, who I judged about what he did, he went through the 12 steps, and he starts going to church, and he gets baptized, he becomes Catholic. Now he's able to marry people, which is pretty cool, you know. And his whole religion and belief has changed within, I don't know, maybe 2 years, and it's pretty cool to see that, you know. And how this programming can add on to more spirituality, and if you don't have any, you can add more. But to the people that have religious, it's kind of hard for them to even get this, you know. And that's where I go into, like, I can pray all I want, but I'm not going to get what I have to get, you know. And going back to where it says in the 11th step, like, faith without works is death, and that, like, I share about like how I can be spiritually like grounded in prayer, meditation, but I'm not taking the actions behind that. I'm not going to get any results. I'm just going to know what I know, and I'm not going to get what I get. And that's just my experience, you know. And but I haven't taken anybody through the 12 steps that believe in God. You know, they kind of just dwell off, and that's just for me. Tupavano, religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do, but call to his attention the fact that, however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he have not drank. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice his very precepts he knows so well. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. Outline the program of action explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you be helping him. Make it plain that he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to be, that he would only try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. And that was the only promise, the first promise, promise my sponsor gave to me. He promised me that once I go through this, to help another person. And that was really it, and very simple. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. And, so me talking with another person, I tell him what we're gonna do or what he's going to do. You know, go right through one, two, and three, explain to him what four is and what nine is. And then, you know, I have good luck with that, bringing people through, and making it clear that he's not under pressure. And I've had experience with other my friends who were signing contracts in AA about, like, you know, this is what you're going to do for 90 days. After 90 days, if you're not happy with me or you don't want to move on, you can do that. So, and for me, it was never, you know, writing my name and, you know, to my sponsor in the part of this book being like, yeah, I'm signing up for 90 days to do this program. If it doesn't work, I'm going to go out and kill myself or drink. It was never like that, you know, but some of my friends have done that. Make it clear he's under pressure. Okay. If he does not want to see you again, if he doesn't want to, you should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been staying quiet, full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions or directions. You know, and I've seen that in people who, you know, I've asked the question to my sponsors before and mentors in AA, like, what will happen, you know, when you're qualifying somebody and they don't kind of agree or identify to what it says in one and two, you know, what happens then? Do you just tell them to not come to AA? Do you tell them to find something else? And it's basically like, I've came in contact with one person who's a hard drinker, who drinks, you know, and he can stop at times. He drinks maybe once or twice a weekend. And then, you know, for me, that's not my experience. And I said, like, once it's out of you, do you constantly think about it? Do you constantly have to tell yourself lies to drink? And does it get worse when you're sober? And he goes, never. And I, at the time, like, I didn't have the experience that I had now. And I said, you know, maybe you can just keep on going to this meeting that you're going to. You know, it's perfect for you. Just go. And I said, I'll always be here to help you. And he tagged along by coming to diners with us, and he never came to a detox, but he always rolled with us, see how we were doing, you know, very pleased to see me and my network, and that was pretty cool. And there was other people who didn't want to hear about, like, them having this at all, like, very very aggressive towards, like, them having alcoholism. They didn't want to hear it, and it was kind of like, you know, like oh my God, like what did I do? You know, like, what did I do? And and I forget that, like, I think I'm doing more harm than good. But it's like, if for me, like, when my sponsor was giving this to me, I wasn't horrified. I was thankful. I was like, thank God there's this. Thank God. You know, and I don't know. For the people that don't identify it, then you don't have it. Your candidate may give reasons why he not to follow all the program. He may be a rebel at the thought of the drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made such progress if you had not taken action. I was told that all the time. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him a copy of this book. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once. You may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he is likely to say you rushed him. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they work for you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And, you know, where it says, this is sometimes a mistake if the man is anxious to proceed. And, you know, to me, that's good. You know, it's kind of like, all right, they want to do the step work, they're willing, you know, and then when they're going, like I was brought to the Salvation Army maybe 2 months ago to go speak, and I was asked by a guy to sponsor him because he identified with some of the abuse that was in my story, and he identified also with the drinking and the other things, and he asked me, and he was very gung-ho about doing the step work, which is good. So I sat down with him on a Tuesday. I went all the way out of my way to go down to Newark to meet up with this man, and we were going to 1, 2, and 3. And I let him talk about how the abuse that he was in, the charges that he was in. And I just let him talk because I don't know if this is the first time he was talking to another man about this problem. I didn't know, you know, so I just wanted to get, you know, see where he was at, you know. And I was still going into the book with him, trying to not have him so much dissertate about other things, but, you know, yes or no, you know, just to see if he's a duck. And yesing to a lot of things. And then next week came, and it was always meeting him on Tuesdays, you know, because Tuesdays he was out of work by 5, I was out of work by 5, and I could go down there from Belleville where I work, and it takes me, 15 minutes to get down there, as of 20 minutes from my house, and it's kind of hard to reach people in those facilities, because they don't have cell phones, there's only pay phones, and at certain hours you can call them, and they'll give them the phone. And I called this guy at 5 o'clock, and they couldn't give him the phone. So my instinct was not to go. And the next week I called him. He said to come, and I went there. He could not be found, you know. And then I saw him maybe a week or two later at a meeting, and he was down my throat about me not being willing to help him. Mm. And, of course, me being a very sensitive and fearful guy, I took blame to it. I really did. And I was like, man, like I'm just here to help you. And he was very mad about me doing that, and I said, I was like, you know, I'm here to, you know, help you, but it's like, I mean, I was trying to get a hold of you and I even went down there to meet up with you, and you weren't there. I guess you were working or asleep or something else came up, and before doing this, I would have been right down this guy's throat too. You know what I mean? I would have just been where he was at, you know, blaming, but I got to see where, like, I was wrong. Maybe, you know, maybe I didn't give him enough time, and maybe he wants a little bit more, you know. So I went down there the week after that because I said to him, call me. And he did. And he called me, and we went through. I gave him direction on the 4-step, and he's writing as of now, you know. But that's one of my experiences about, like, going through this fast and kind of, like, I don't know, maybe having time for a guy like that. And there's times where I was rushing somebody through to work where they didn't want to, like, they were just on the phone the whole time, and I was directing them, you know, maybe you shouldn't be on the phone, you know, like, let's go through this. And what happened was they just went right out, you know. And also, like, where it says never talk down to an alcoholic from any spiritual form, and I think I mentioned this to you guys the first week about how it says in There is a Solution or More About Alcoholism, I can't remember, but it says it's like where I'm at, where the sponsor's asking me, do you trust me with everything that I'm going to give you? You know, asking some questions. And one of the questions was, you know, do you think I'm going to sharpen your axe? And it's basically me giving you ammunition to hate some other person or boosting your ego or giving you resentment, you know? And it all stems from me coming into AA and hearing, like, you know, me having an experience where everyone's the same. I'm on everyone's same level, you know? And all of a sudden I start hearing about the big book thumpers, you know, the 13 steppers, and all these other people and all these other things, you know? And my mind starts going, you know? And so I have to remind myself not to say anything to a sponsee about, you know, like, it was as simple as one of my sponsors was like, you know, that Drop the Rock book, never read it, never bring it into a meeting, don't buy it, and if you do, keep it in your drawer. That's it, you know? And then all of a sudden, I'm start going to meetings like, yeah, you know, that Drop the Rock book, that sucks, you know? Like, don't read that book, you know? Like, Living Sober, that sucks too. Like, I never read it. I never read it at all. Mm-hmm. And so what starts happening, I start doing that to another person, and I kind of forget where I was at with that and where it took me. And even, like, giving them, like, some, you know, some dishonesty or even talking down to them, you know, I've been talked down to by sponsors. And it wasn't the encouraging way, you know? And it was kind of me, you know, I've been called out before. How can I explain this? I mean, I think there's a good way and a bad way to confront somebody, but I've been told negative things by others who were trying to help me. And it kind of just backlashed by our relationship just crumbling, you know? And I try to learn by those things and not do them, you know? So even if they're not an alcoholic, I try to be like, you know, as one, as a person, as one, you know? Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And that's what I do. And I tell him that it's an honor, because it is. If he's not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act as a banker or for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This may do after he gets hurt some more. And I've had people, you know, being nice, you know, like, they want a pack of cigarettes, I start buying them packs of cigarettes, and they start asking more and more and more. And one of my second sponsees, I kept on giving. And it was taking away money from me paying bills. It was taking away money from me and my girlfriend could have time. And my girlfriend called me out on that. She was like, maybe you're spending a little bit too much money on him and not your own, you know? And I talked with my sponsor about it. He was like, yeah, just stop giving him money, you know? And and I could think that maybe he was getting high or drunk with it. You know, I can plant all these, you know, delusions in my head. I don't know what he was doing with the money, but it was hurting me. It was affecting me. And there was also a time where these newcomers that are in these rehabs, or they don't have a car they can't get to, and they asked me to be the sponsor, so I'm thinking to take them to the 12 steps, and their whole thing is just to go to a meeting, you know, get coffee, fellowship, get out for a little bit of the house, you know, not be lonely. And maybe the second or third time I'm doing that, they don't want to even do the work, they just want to go to a meeting, and then they're expecting me to pick them up, and I have to, like, go forward and be honest with them, be like, hey, I'm just here to take you through this 12 steps. Like I'll be, it's cool to take you through a meeting here and there, but like, this was our agreement, you know? And it kind of hurts them more than it hurts me, you know? Because they get upset, they get the whole thing different, you know, twisted. Is it good to stop or?
Yeah, I think
you okay, should. I can talk about this forever. So thank you for letting me share, and thank you for having me be here.